Hello, hello, and welcome to Radio Plays, y'all. We're bringing you a super special episode today where we give the full shebang-a-bang about everything Borderless Theater Company and season one of Radio Plays. So today we have some really interesting questions for you from our patrons, plus from ourselves, that we're going to try to answer as best as possible. And we have some really great stuff that we're going to bring to you. And so we're going to try and give you all the insights from our very diverse team of spectacular actors and multi-hat wearing people. So, anyway. Yeah, exactly. I don't have my hat on. I took mine off. So anyway, without further ado, let's get this thing popping. My name is Sean Dale, Artistic Director of Borderless Theater Company, and just popcorn this around.
Cool. Do you pass it? I don't know.
Yeah, you say who.
If you popcorn it, you gotta pass it.
Oh, if there we go. Popcorn, okay, cool. You right. All right, Kara.
Cool. My name is Kara Limer. That will probably be explored later in this interview, I imagine. I'm the chief operating officer slash resident actor of Borderless Theater Co. And I am popping it over to Anna Fontaine.
Hey, I'm Anna Fontaine. I am the CFO at Borderless Theater Company and, you know, actor on the first season of Radio Plays. And I'm going to pop it over to Shay.
Hey there. Thanks for that pop. I'm Shay Donovan. I am a resident actor in Borderless Theater Companies and our marketing director. And I will slide it on down. I don't know if this is where you are on everyone's screen, but this is where you are for me, to David.
Well, I'm I'm looking down on mine. You're down here. I'm David Soyga. I'm the actor. I also edit sometimes, I guess, you know.
The actor.
You know, I'm the actor.
The actor.
I'm the actor. You know, when you say, we need an actor, I'm the guy you think of.
Call Dave.
The actor.
It felt like a nice, like, digital zip-zap-zop.
Yeah. We should have organized our Zoom so that we were all, like, in the same layout at each other throughout. Yes. But instead, we're all going to be, like, looking in different places.
It'll be great. Do you want to dive into questions?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Well, don't mind me. I'm just going to pop these watermelons in my mouth.
That's so professional.
That is the least. I thought I was the least professional one with my drink.
Look, I saw Kara take a sip of her drink and I said, you know what?
We'll have this
David's
first
got
question.
Wine.
All right, Sean, stop eating ready. Your watermelon and answer our first question.
All right, fine.
Put it down. And answer this. So, Sean, how did Borderless come to life? What inspired you to make all this happen?
So, this could sound real corny and cheesy, but it was like just barely into the pandemic. And I'd say it was a culmination of a couple things. Trying to figure out life, figure out what we're going to do with this acting thing immediately after we graduate and we walk into a pandemic. And try to figure out what that means for our art. And I think there was some interjections of, like, ideas from the ether. One being, in particular, shout out to Shay. We just did her Shakespeare monologue compilation.
Oh, the sonnet.
The sonnet. There it is. The sonnet response. Yeah. The sonnet response series. And, like, just feeling the high off of doing something like that. I was like, man, what else can we do? And I literally, like, I couldn't sleep one night. And it just came to me, like, in the middle of the night when I was just rolling around thinking.
So you're saying this was a sleep-deprived idea.
This was a sleep-deprived idea, you know? And when when I'm not sleep-deprived, I don't even know where I'm at. So when I'm sleep-deprived and this idea came, I was like, I should write this down. And I didn't, but I texted Kara the next day. And I said, Kara, I need your help. And I was like, please tell me if this is a good idea. And so that's literally how it all just kind of came to be.
Nice.
So thanks, Kara and Shay.
No problem. And actually, that's a kind of great segue into our next question. So Sean and Kara, how did you assemble the rest of us? How do we know each other? What's the deal? You had the idea, you shared it. Ooh. Kara was like, yes, great idea. And then ..
Yeah, so we all know each other from East 15 Acting School in London. That's where we all met, getting our MFAs in acting. And yeah, I mean, it was not very far into the pandemic that, I mean, I feel like it was still like everything kind of locked down, like what, March? It was like St. Patrick's Day, wasn't it? Like it was like mid-March. So I think it was before even the beginning of April that you called me. And it was great to hear from you because, like, you know, I mean, some people you kind of stay in touch with and some people you kind of fall out of touch, and everybody was scrambling with the whole, like, you know, yeah, what are we going to do with ourselves post moving, you know, moving after grad school and all that. And yeah, so he said, is this a good idea? And I said, yes, it's a great idea. And so, yeah, I mean, I feel like within that conversation, we, I mean, David and Anna immediately came to mind as like being brilliant people to bring on the team. And Clay was immediately mentioned as a brilliant director to help us direct some of the projects. And so everything just kind of fell into place after that, I guess.
Yeah. And I'd say that was a huge help, knowing that we had reliable people, you know, people who knew us and people. I think the core of this team was part of the marketing team at East 15 that we had know, helmed during graduate years. And so it's just knowing that you had reliable, smart people in your circle really was a big help in reaching out to this core team now, you know?
Yeah. And something that that was really fantastic, I feel like, you know, just from the get-go was, is the fact that, you know, like everybody kind of landed in their own little area. I mean, I'm back home in the Texas Panhandle, you know, people are spread out kind of all over the world. You know, Shay stayed in London and, you know, there's a pocket of people that landed in LA, pocket of people that landed in New York, you know, Pacific Northwest. So we were, you know, and it's kind of interesting because I feel like with a lot of MFA programs, a lot of people just kind of stay in one particular geographic area and keep, you know, collaborating with each other and making theater and starting companies and, you know, carrying on the connections that they had in school. And then they just, you know, keep using those connections to make art. And with our course being an international program, you don't really have that luxury of everybody being able to stay in this nice little pocket where everybody gets to keep working together. So, you know, it's really interesting the sort of international collaborative opportunities that that this opened up, sort of semi thanks to the lockdown a little bit. But yeah.
And we assembled. Cool. Nice.
So, Anna, what has the process of being CFO been like, and how do you expect it to change going forward?
Well, CFO-wise, in my day job experience, I have work experience doing filing tax returns for various businesses and then also doing things like business licenses. And so when you guys talked to me and we're just chatting about kind of the business element of things, I just already kind of knew a little bit about it, just again, vaguely through work things. So, I mean, the process initially, I think, one, we determined, are we for-profit or non-for-profit? And there was a little bit of exploring what the differences are and what works best for this company and the goals that we have. And ultimately, we've aimed for non-profit, just in general with our goals and as a means of kind of helping us financially and doing the things that we want to do to help others in the theater community. And so just learning about that, and again, the process for any kind of technical things, again, application-wise, it's checking a different box. But I do think the process of becoming a nonprofit has been different, but been something that's been interesting to learn about. And I think going forward, kind of how you keep that, those missions and those goals at the forefront, you know, of new works, of helping playwrights, of giving opportunities to people, not just bound to one particular city or region, but again, in a borderless way, in a way that is expansive. So I think that's kind of going forward, especially some of those goals, to kind of keep that mission at the forefront and making sure we kind of expand as much as possible. We already had a great first season of different playwrights from different people, places and different people as guest artists that are all over the world. So it's just kind of keeping that in mind as we go forward.
Yeah. This one's for David then. What was your role like starting off, and how has it, you know, sort of developed as we've gone through this first season?
So I remember getting the call and Sean was like, hey, you want to do this thing? And I was living with my parents as a 27-year-old man. So I said, please, please, yes, please, please put me in your thing. And at first I was just brought in to be actor. And we were talking like what I would like sort of have as my job. And at the time, I was trying to teach myself coding, like web development, because, you know, we all did very strange things when the pandemic hit. We were just like, I have to do something with my life. And it turns out I don't like that. So I stopped doing it. So for a time, I was going to be like head of like web stuff. And it was like, well, what does that even encompass? What does this mean? We were like, let's just get a Squarespace page. And so I went back to just being like actor and, you know, funny guy. And then after a while, we realized that Sean was getting bogged down with the editing. And I had done some music editing in high school as part of like my music course. So I was like, oh, I don't really remember how to do this at all, but I can try to reteach myself how to do it. And Sean was like, yes, please. So...
yes, I was.
Yeah, this was during Copper Angel when you were sort of scrambling, and I said, "Hey, I can try," and you said, "Yes, yes, try. Please try." So that's
an easy place. So simple. What are you talking about?
It's only like what, 2 hours long? Yeah. So that's kind of how I wound up as editor.
Kara, have you, as you are our COO, have you had any moments where you've either regretted taking on scheduling everybody, or just in general, any, oh no, what have I gotten myself into kind of moments in that particular role?
Yeah, so this is actually a validating question for me personally whenever I saw it come through, just because I always feel like, specifically with the scheduling, I always feel like I always kind of get off the hook a little bit with like an easy job, because when I compare that to like sitting in front of a computer for hours and hours and hours editing, you know, or, you know, staying on top of all the social media stuff, which is always ever changing and everything. Those are definitely not my areas of expertise. So, and there's something, I think I'm kind of a nerd in that, like, I don't know, just like working out time management stuff and like schedules and organizing and all that.
Jamming on your planner.
Like, yeah, exactly. It's weirdly kind of like satisfying to me. And I have a handy dandy little app that like has a little slider that you can like look at every time, you know, you can like set all these cities and all these different time zones. And so you can like see what time zone everybody's in. It's been, I think it's from that standpoint, I think all of our skill sets are, really well balanced, you know, from that standpoint. So, I don't think I've had any like panic moments. Yeah, I do feel like I'm in a bit of a catch-all role a little bit. So I'm, you know, I try to stay consistent in, you know, making sure that I sort of do stay on top of all of the kind of miscellaneous things that that need to get done. But no, it's been really rewarding so far.
We're voice actors.
Ficky. Yes. That's right.
Yeah.
So this one's for Shay. How did it feel being brought in to handle all the marketing after the company had already started rolling?
Yeah, well, I think that's sort of the right way to do that, really, right? Like when you have your ideation phase, that's when you're figuring out what your voice is and what your brand is and who your target audience is, and the work that you all did so well up and really has to be done to sort of preload any sort of marketing that you're going to do, right? Because if you're not able to identify that and synthesize it, you have this sort of like abstract, we're just getting started marketing, and then you have to transfer to fit your voice. And so I think coming in later when that was already really clearly defined was a great gift, because I could just step in and pick up what you've created and then run with that. And I'd say for me personally, that's kind of typically the way that I do that sort of work. Like I've really just been brought in a la carte to help market shows or projects and things sort of on their own, and they were off the ground, they were ready to get the ball rolling, and then I'd come in and pick that up and then sort of leave and bounce project to project. So it's nice being settled into this project, right, long term, knowing that I'll hold our marketing journey for longer than just from, you know, rehearsal period to end of run, right? That's sort of the advantage of it. It doesn't really have an end. But yeah, and also, you know, as you had said, Sean, I had been, my pandemic thing was like to panic start my own company, really. So I've been holding all of our marketing myself and was getting really excited, like super jazzed about like Canva and like using all kinds of social media apps and things like that. So yeah, loved it. Good move.
Good. And you're really good at what you do. I think that was the main thing that like stuck out to all of us was watching you, you know, market yourself and do all and market all these different projects and stuff that you were doing and just seeing all the response that you were getting. It was like, yo, she knows how to market. We need that, you know, and it's been really valuable. It's been really valuable having your insights on the team.
Yeah.
So Shay, what do you have to say?
You're gonna do the Sean.
I don't
you're
know.
A mess.
Does that ping not work? I tried to ping it.
First of all, you didn't even ping it correctly.
Oh, okay.
You didn't even ping it correctly because I asked the next question.
Oh no. Least,
oh man. Sean. Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Sean, tell you what. I'll do the pinging because I have two screens. I can just have
God,
it
this
here
happens
and I
every
say
interview.
Where, what goes
I start off okay and then I fall apart.
I'll
keep you on your toes.
I think I actually literally said that. Okay.
Here's a question for our fearless leaders: will we ever do any recognized work or public domain plays rather than focusing on new plays?
I love that question.
That's a great question.
Yeah, so part of what we wanted to do from the outset, because we went through that whole like brainstorming planning phase, right? Where it's like, so is Radio Plays our company as well as our podcast, or do we have a production company, which is kind of the umbrella under which this podcast happens? And we went with the latter. So Borderless Theater Company is the production company that we founded, and Radio Plays is sort of our inaugural / main project at this point in time. But thanks to Borderless, I think there is room to, I think that was kind of part of the strategy for setting it up that way, is that we do have the room now to create other projects if we want to, whenever we have the resources and everything to do so. So my response would be, why not? Over to Sean.
Yeah. That's a great ping. And so I also agree with that now that we have a strong template for what Radio Plays looks like and how to continue developing that, the integration of more projects that can come under the helm of Borderless Theater Company can start to be integrated as well. And I know that David, at the beginning, when we were trying to figure all this out, was like, you know, we should, you know, consider Shakespeare stuff or consider public domain stuff and da-da-da-da-da. And although we put a pin in that, now we can relook at some of these older ideas that, you know, have crossed the table while we're trying to develop what we do. But yeah, I mean, there's tons of ideas in the mix that can be implemented now.
I vaguely remember Monologue Mondays and One Act Wednesdays as being a thing on our like list of ideas.
I have ideas.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Oh, we were all over the place, man. But in a great way. That's right. Just boop, boop, boop.
Yeah. So in the conversation about like new versus established works, do you have preference between original works or established ones? And maybe what are the merits of one or the other?
Yeah. I mean, me personally, that's tough because I'm a big old Shakespeare nerd. Like, I've got my computer's currently resting on my complete works. It's holding everything up.
Love it.
So I always just, there's something about that, again, so that's obviously public domain, is very well established, but I love Shakespeare. But it's weird because career-wise, I've done a lot of different plays and stuff, but I sometimes either go into, like, doing all the Shakespeare stuff or doing really, really new work, like still in development or new play development. And they're both fun. There's a sense of discovery, I suppose, with both, kind of whether it's rediscovering a text or discovering it, you know, digging into something when it's Shakespeare and finding stuff within that. Or discovering, like, how are we going to get this on its feet, or who are these characters and how they talk to each other? So which one's my favorite? I don't know. I guess I'll just lean into the nerdiness and just accept that, like, Shakespeare has the edge. He's been around for a minute, you know. And also, I've never done, like, a Greek tragedy or a Greek comedy or any kind of ancient Greek something. And I kind of, I've never done a Greek play. And so I'd like to, a very, very, very established play.
We'll put you in the frogs.
Yeah. Okay. I don't your cast. Sure.
Yeah.
Antigone, I know, and that one I'd be about. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the frog, sure. I'll be in any of them. Throw something old at me.
Love it. So, David, from an acting standpoint, what is the hardest thing as an actor when performing in a new work versus an established or classic play?
I would say, personally, at least in the context of the way we do new work, because that's all I can really speak to, is trying to skirt the line between giving the playwright what they wrote, because that's the whole point of radio plays, is that we're taking these new works and we're bringing them to life for these playwrights. And as of now, anyway, you know, who knows what the future holds, but as of now, we're saying, like, we've got these playwrights coming in and letting us do their stuff for free, you know? So it's like, you want to create it as accurately to how they wrote the character as possible, but you also want to put your spin on it. So it's skirting that line between saying, well, I'm the actor, I can only play what I can play, but also saying, the whole point of this is creating their work. Whereas with a more established produced play, you can kind of say to yourself, well, I paid for the rights, I'm going to do what I want, you know?
Unless the rights say you can't, but yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't do those plays.
Samuel Beckett's coming for you, David.
Listen, what's his name? Neil Simon? Not a fan.
Does Neil Simon not like that?
He doesn't let you change anything. If you take out swear words from his plays, he'll sue you.
Oh, all right. Oh, well, look, he wants those words in there. Like, that's his
purpose. I don't know if it's even, purpose, Neil Simon, right. I think, is dead, but the estate, you know, whatever.
They're coming for you either way. In general, this is to everyone, our first kind of big everyone question, and we can kind of pop it around. But in general, what kind of plays do you all like? Are there any particular, I don't know, styles or genres? And in particular, are there any themes that you find that you like to tackle or that you're attracted to? Hmm. I'm going to answer last because I asked the question.
Second to last, called it.
Oh.
You know, I'll go ahead and just pop in.
Okay.
I would say I like plays that embrace theatricality. Mm. So I'm not as into naturalism and realism. I like when things are very staged and have that element of larger than life. So I would like to sort of take that to the far end and maybe do something really absurd, or maybe even like futurism would be cool, because futurism plays are just the weirdest. And I think it'd be interesting to see how we in 2021 tackle plays that are basically Black Mirror episodes, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it just things that embrace the fact that it isn't life and it is, you know, like with Shakespeare, Exit Pursued by a Bear, you know, stuff like that, where you get to just really embrace the weirdness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's really cool. Yeah. I never knew that about you. Like, that's, I'm like, I'm learning new things about David.
I love that. I was going to hop in and say, this is probably a nightmare for literally everyone, particularly in the radio space. I would love to do something where sound and music is an important part in the audio journey, right? Like how Tennessee Williams was so intentional about whatever piece of music was playing at a certain moment in a scene, and like you have that piece of music specifically. Yeah, just something that plays really intentionally, I think, with sound and with music in like the radio play space, I think would be really cool. I would love to do that.
Yeah. Cool. You know, I love a good farce. It sounds crazy, and it's probably totally on brand with me, but like, I love a good farce because I just love chaos a little bit and watching things just unfold in a totally chaotic way. Totally not like me at all.
I love it.
David never knows. Would have, never, ever would
no,
have suspected.
You're an agent of chaos.
No, exactly.
Speaking of agent of chaos, you called second to last and you went third to last.
I know. Surprise!
Love it.
I did.
Exhibiting.
Right. Yes, I just live chaos.
Love it.
But I do, but I would say that's like older Sean now, I think, likes. I'm starting to gravitate more towards plays that have more of a universal message to them. Mm. You know, kind of like, I think that's why, you know, I really liked Trey's broadcast when we did it during the season, just because I'd never really done a play like that. That was just so overtly, boom, this is a play about exactly what's going on right now. And I found that challenging in a sense, because it's like woo, this is going to bring up some stuff for some people who are not going to like what they're going to hear, but at the same time, this is a conversation that needs to happen. And so I'm starting to gravitate a little bit more towards those more grounded, you know, universal plays in that sense.
I would say that a genre that I really, really love is kind of historical drama. I can't remember if I was the first person in the company to read Copper Angel or if it was somebody else, but regardless,
it might have been.
You know, Copper Angel was really fun whenever it popped through our list, you know, this past season, because it was like, oh my goodness, you know, I mean, it just that completely and totally strikes a chord with me. I was in a devised verbatim historical piece at East 15, mm-hmm. In which Anna Coleman Ladd was a character in that play, and we have some other historical drama potentially coming through on season two that I'm excited about. But yeah, I just really love telling those stories, keeping those stories alive from people that have lived before us. And, you know, it's always kind of that important thing of like understanding where you came from and the fact that like history often repeats itself. And I love the thing where it's like, you know, I feel like it's so easy to kind of cast people as like, you know, you see them in like old timey photographs or something and you're like, oh, they're just old timey. But it's like, yeah, no, humans are humans, yeah. You know, right. And we've always been humans. And, you know, just kind of making that connection with the past, I really love. So, nice. Yeah.
I'll jump into mine real quick. I would say I kind of like plays either where like the personal and the political kind of intermingle, where you have like personal dynamics and personal relationships, but they may have a bigger political or world affecting kind of result, which because then just makes the stakes really, really high and very interesting. And I love a dark comedy. I like kind of that weird, like morally gray, complicated characters. And I like a dark comedy where, you know, again, you're something's funny and you laugh and then they'll either like get you like because you're laughing, so it kind of immediately opens you up in a way. And so then some like insight will come or a line will come or a zing and it's like, oh, ooh, that got me in a way I didn't anticipate. Or also I just kind of have a slightly dark sense of humor. So I appreciate where it's like, that's a little messed up, but it's insightful, but it's also funny. So yeah, so I'd say like between those two, and I mean, yeah, those are probably my favorites typically.
That's going on your epitaph, messed up but funny.
Messed up but funny. Yeah, that's probably it's apt.
Here's a question for Anna and Kara. In the debate of Kara versus Kara, I am firmly in the Kara camp.
Everybody.
What is the selection process like for play selection? And then from the selection process through to episode release, describe just the gist of our radio plays chaos.
Yeah.
Mm. I'll let Anna jump in with the selection process. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think when we first started, we didn't have anything because we were new. So it was initially us just reaching out to any and every playwright or friend of a playwright or local person or anybody kind of like, hey, this is what this project is. Would you be interested in having a new work performed in this medium and in this way and working with us to kind of see what by doing this, what comes of this play? And hopefully it will give the playwright an even wider audience outside of a particular city or region where they typically work. So initially it was a lot of reaching out, and now we've had a number of people submit directly to us for season two, which has been really cool. And we've basically for the selection process, we kind of divide up reading things initially, but we always make sure that a play is read by at least two people. And we give comments, maybe we kind of have come up with a little ranking system just as a means of evaluating stuff just kind of firsthand. And then we did it for this first one, we did it for kind of looking at potential season two stuff, basically a big old meeting where we talked about what worked, what is still maybe in progress or still maybe a work in progress, how we think this play would benefit from the medium that we're in. Yeah, you know, yay or nay, and just kind of discussing stuff. And from there, we're able to just kind of talk it out and figure out, okay, I think these are the plays that fit this particular season, that they're different enough from each other so that we get a nice kind of variety of genre and voices that we're hearing from and point of views and perspectives. So we just kind of looked at all of that, and that helped us craft this first season in our process. And then once we picked the plays, we came up with an order for the season.
And
the production order, actually. So we knew what we were tackling when.
And in this first season, it was a deliberate choice to tackle Bera's ones first, since they were a little bit shorter form and kind of like two and three handers. So it's kind of like, okay, let's get our sea legs. Let's see how this process works. And then we dove straight into Copper Angel, which was a bigger one. Guest artists and the opposite. it was a, much bigger project. So we got to get our feet wet with that too. And the whole like scheduling thing, making sure that everybody's around, and especially if we have people joining from overseas in the cast, it's that thing of making sure that getting everybody's schedules and stuff every week and staying on top of that and making sure that we have a rehearsal calendar that kind of works. And I feel like with each process we did we always start with the first read through. Which includes the playwright, and that's their opportunity to kind of sit in the room with us and hear it, and provide us with any notes that they have, anything else, that they want teased out more or anything. And then it's a process of recording, getting several takes of those. And then I think in every one we've had a final read through as well with the playwright.
Or
most of them anyway.
Yeah, I think for most of them. We were another part of the process, I think, for the season was figuring out, do we rehearse kind of like a regular play where you have a read through, you do rehearsals, and then at the end we do like the show where we record the final version, or do we record along the way, kind of do it more like bit by bit? And we've kind of found a medium area, I think, for going forward. But I think, for the most part, we always try to have the playwright present there to see kind of where we've gotten to the end result. And also the director and the playwright and a company member are always kind of there to talk along the way. Especially, I think, in regards to if there are any kind of sound effects, or where do we want to maybe say stage directions, or do we want to use an effect for a sound, for a stage direction, and kind of figure that out in conjunction with the playwright.
Now, David, why don't you tell us what the editing process is like? So, like, what software do you use? Tell us about the post-production process.
Yes.
All that jazz.
So, Sean and I, for the last two plays, so Rabbit on the Print and Happy Places, I did the bulk of the editing, and then I pass it off to Sean for him to finish. Sean did the bulk of the editing on the others, or all of the editing on the others, depending on the play. The editing process has been a very evolving process, but Sean and I both use Adobe Audition, which is a wonderful software that is actually probably the most intuitive of all of the Adobe softwares. When you compare learning Audition to learning Premiere Pro or Photoshop even, it's like, oh, all of the buttons do what they say they do. Cool.
Yeah.
which is like a weird surprise with Adobe.
Pleasant surprise. But so it's sponsored by... Wait, no.
Yeah. sponsor us, Adobe. So we use Adobe Audition. The process has changed for every single play, and depending on how we do things. But general setup is during the rehearsal process, we get at least two takes of every scene, and then we aim to get a recording of the entire play as like a read through. Whoever's directing it will say, these are the takes I like. The editor will take those takes. And unless there's something audibly wrong with those takes that you have to use another take, I tend not to mess with the others. I try to trust the director. Because we do our recordings over Zoom, internet lag is a major part of the editing process. It's probably the biggest part of our editing process. Taking out the delay from Zoom, because you'll wind up with what seems like a quick conversation in the moment over Zoom, but is actually 3-second gaps between every line. So it's a lot. And then there's a lot of, once you get it like to that point, then it's a lot of cleanup in terms of reducing noise, equalizing in order to improve things. And this is all stuff that I'm, self-taught, Sean self-taught. We're learning through talking with others, watching YouTube videos. But I think we're getting pretty good at it, getting things sounding pretty crisp and clean. And then the system that we're going to use going forward is one person will do 90% of the editing, pass it off to the other to do the last 10%, just cleanups. And, oh, I think this sound effect would sound good here. Basically, one person tries to get it done, and then they pass it off for reviews. And then we swap roles on the next one. So nobody has to do all of the editing on any play, and no one has to do the bulk of the editing on two plays in a row. That's what we're going for in the future. And then for sound effects, Adobe has a huge library that you can download of varying quality. Some of them are sound effects that I have found myself asking, who has ever used this sound effect? In fact, I would say a lot of them are things where I'm like, do I need a sound effect of a man going like, like it very, very loud.
I want a compilation. I want a whole compilation.
Of like, do I need this? Like that soda commercial midway.
Yeah. Yep. But and then there's websites like freesounds.org that are wonderful that you can download sounds from.
Really nice.
I've actually gotten the bulk of my sound effects from the YouTube Media Library, which is within the content creator section of YouTube. And there's copyright-free music and sound effects on there. And you can find a lot of really good stuff, lots of different variations. They all tend to be really high quality with no background noise. Free Sounds is more anyone can upload anything, so you have to search a little harder. If YouTube
you have to trust
has
the stars.
Something, yeah. If YouTube has something, it tends to be really good. If you search for can opening sound, that's the exact sound you want, but they might not have it. So yeah, that's the editing.
Cool.
So Kara, have you started producing an episode and had to cancel it for any reason, or did you know, you have to majorly change something about a particular episode midway through the process?
Funny you should ask, Sean. In fact, we did run into a little hiccup about midway through season one.
We did.
Yeah, so it was last autumn. We were working on Rabbit Onto Print. And I think we were, we did that about like what, October, November-ish timeline. Yeah. And that was a pretty large cast one. So we had, a couple of guest artists with us. Shay, I think that was your first one with us voicing in it. And anyway, it was a lot of fun. But we had done it all, like had put it in the books. It was well before Thanksgiving, like everything was done and dusted and sorted and carrying on our merry way. And anyway, one fateful Saturday, I can't actually remember who it was who called me. Was it you, Sean? I think it was you. I think you were the first person
to call
me. It was
me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Because David called me.
Oh, jam. Yeah. It was that moment of like, I have news. And it's like, okay, I have news. And it's like, okay, what news? And it just turned out that whenever they got into kind of the nitty gritty of editing it all, there were just, I don't know, if you want to ping in
a myriad
of our editors, a myriad of issues.
I don't think we need to go into nitty gritty, but I will say that Sean and I both agreed. All of us, every person in that play, except for Anna, had unacceptable audio quality.
Yep.
Yes.
It was just a whole thing.
I was like, wait, did I mess up? Oh, no, I didn't. Okay, cool.
You're the only one who did not
mess
up.
We all were bad. Anna was fine.
Yeah, all right. Well,
the story of her life.
What else is new? Am I right?
Yeah, always doing the best, always doing the most. No. But.
I'll never forget that conversation. Yep. Like, whenever David has something serious to tell me, he always like, hey, bud, do you have a minute to talk?
Hey, bud, love it.
Hey, bud. I'm like, something
here
is
it comes.
Wrong.
What went wrong?
I had worked so hard on that.
Bless
and
your
like,
heart.
It was one of those things that like I was like, okay, it sounds so much better than when I started, so it must sound good, right? And then I listened back to it once I was done, and I said, oh no, it doesn't. Yeah. It sounds better than when I started, but it still sounds terrible. So I sent it to Sean, and I was hoping Sean would be like, no, it sounds good, actually.
That's what I was hoping. I was like, I'm sure it doesn't sound that bad.
He's just
I'm
being sure extra critical.
Yeah, I was like, David, you know, this is his first, like, full length play that he's editing. He's feeling a little, you know, he's freaking out a little bit. And then I got it. I was like, I should probably call Kara. What's going on?
We might need to re-record. Yeah.
I basically got the Facebook Messenger. You like when the ellipses pop up to tell you someone's typing. That's what I got from Sean. I was like, oh no,
oh no, yeah. Here it comes.
All right, yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's that it is that challenging thing of that was the first time that we had. I think it was that we had like a bunch of basically a whole bunch of characters who needed to sound like they were in the same room.
Yeah,
because that's the big challenge for us, right? Is that like characters. It's you know we're scattered all over the world and we gotta sound like we're in one room,
right? We're all in the same office.
That's really down to our editors. So basically we scrapped all the work that we had done over the past at least I think it was 5 weeks, and I was like, okay, well, you know what we need to do. And I think originally we were talking about like pushing it to the end of the season, like going ahead and like carrying on with Happy Places, and then jumping back in and doing Rabbit at the end. And I was like, you know what? We've just rehearsed it. It's fresh. We all know it. Now is when we need to sort it.
Yeah, so, fix these technical elements.
Yep. So we got our actors, like huge shout out to our guest artists who were willing to pop back in. And and we got all of our issues sorted and did, I think we did the second record in 2 days. We kind of did like a first half and then second half. Yeah.
Yeah.
And recorded a whole other set of footage. I think we got 2 takes for pretty much everything as well, in 2 days. So anyway, so we did that, and that's what we used, and we all lived happily ever after.
Yeah, it's a great episode.
It was.
The panic
it
was
came
real,
out good but... once we re-recorded it, but yeah. It was definitely a headache.
A fun bumpy yeah. road. Yeah.
I mean, there's always been like a couple little, hey, I just need you to re-record this little thing.
Yeah, like a line.
In different place. Exactly. But like, this was the first major overhaul. But we discovered a lot of really great things in doing that. We were like, okay, there's a different process in how we could do this. We tightened up like a lot of the, you know, processes for how to, you know, submit audio. We were like, okay, you know what? We need everyone to just send us from here on out a segment of them using their microphone. And we even came up with a template of what's good, what's bad, so that people have an idea to go off of. And
which
so I think a lot
going
of
going forward with like guest artists or
exactly.
getting other people involved. So,
huge shout out to our guest voices who like stuck with us through that.
Bless them. bless them. And who changed their locations at the drop of the hat. bought new microphones
Hank
or whatever.
Straight up bought a new microphone.
Bless
now
it's Hank.
A nice little home studio space.
That's right. I'll never forget actually Biz Lion had to like crawl under her bed. to get a good, like, quiet, you know,
space.
I was like, man, now that's some borderless dedication right
there.
You
know? Right.
I'm like, she gets a star.
All right, so, David, when it came to editing these plays, did any of them come out differently than you expected after the editing process was completed? Was one very different or, you know, any surprises along the way?
So... the two that come to mind immediately are Copper Angel, because I didn't edit that one. I just acted in that one.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked how it came together, how Sean got like the music interludes and all that sort of thing, and really wove the music in and out of the story in a nice way. So we all knew that one was good in the rehearsal process. We knew that one, you know, hearing it with all of the music just sort of elevated it. But the big one for me is probably Happy Places, where that one was some scenes were a joy to edit, and then some scenes felt like a Sisyphean task, where I would get the boulder to the top of the hill, only to realize that the boulder fell down the hill again. specifically, there's one scene in that play where... you start in one location, you go outside, you go into another location, and then both locations have dialogue occurring, overlapping one another.
Mm-hmm.
How you do that on stage is a conundrum. How you do that in a soundscape is a nightmare. So I basically did the best I could. I had like 4 days off. I probably spent a solid like 25 hours editing, and then I sent it off to Sean, and I had so little faith in it, and Sean honestly added a few things but didn't change as much as I thought he would, but the few changes he added really made a remarkable difference, and it sounded a lot better than I thought it did, which is just proof that doing 25 hours of work within 4 days on something might cloud your judgment. You know, you might get
caught up.
Could
have another set of ears.
Yeah, you get caught up with your nice, you know, sound blocking headphones that are perfectly balanced, and you sit there and you go, I can hear people's lips smacking, and then 2 weeks later you listen to it with regular earphones and you're like, oh, that sounds really good. So
I'll just say, like, just listening to Happy Places, like what you just described, like the whole, like, outside both locations happening simultaneously, right. It's remarkable. Switching because like forth. I didn't even clock that until you're sitting here talking about it. Like when I was listening to it, I was just sucked up in the story. Like,
you were just in it.
I was just there. I was just in it. Yeah, I wasn't even like, I, you know, so like, which means that you did your job well. So,
and a lot of people have said that this one is one of their favorite episodes. Like people have given a lot of great feedback on it. But that's also a testament too to the not movie magic, but the magic of radio and audio engineering. Because for real, like you're saying, the process, going through the process, is very different than the outcome. And when you hear it, you're like, you know what? That actually all came together much better than how it started. It comes to you in like a puzzle, like a thousand piece puzzle. Then eventually it looks like you can hang it on your wall with some lacquer.
But it's like an abstract painting, so you're not certain if you did it right.
That's exactly it.
Until your friend says, wow, you really nailed that puzzle. And you go, yeah, I did.
That's right. Exactly. And sometimes it still is an abstract painting, but it's an appreciated, elevated level of abstractness. Mm-hmm.
Love it. So, Sean, relevant question. Yes. How did you feel when the first episode was released?
Oh, man. Damn near shed a tear. It was so great to know, A, that we had come that far to have even like been able to release an episode. Like the build up to the release and everything that went into rehearsing and connecting with these writers and everything from the very beginning to the moment that we released it was just so, it was almost a year from when we first started, you know? And so to release that first episode and to have almost overnight like 300 people listen to 200 people, I think, on the first like 2 days tune into that episode. It was like, oh my gosh. It was just beautiful. It was beautiful. And then just to see it grow from there, it's a really touching moment in my life.
Shay, having spoken how it feels to work as an editor, how does it feel listening back to the plays once they go live from the perspective of somebody who has acted in them or in other ways been involved with them? And do you listen to them right as soon as they drop, or do you give them a little minute so that you can distance yourself from the process? And also just, you know, how's it feel listening to yourself talk into your ears?
Yeah, I'd say when I first was being brought on, I think y'all had just finished recording Copper Angel and Sean gave me like a sneak peek listen of that. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the most amazing thing I've ever heard. My ears are exploding. I was like, I loved it. And then when I get really, and I was like so excited to hear it, right? When it's like me and I've been in it, I get ready, critical, analytical, like performance Shay on. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to give myself some serious notes. I'm going to be very like harsh on myself, right? But I do always like to, if we'll record it, I won't listen to anything I send in other than listening back just for like clarity. I send it in and then I'm like, I'll just wait until this episode is released and then do it then. And I think that distance is nice because you get to forget about it enough that you're like, oh yeah, that's what's happening. Ooh, tilks, right? You kind of get to follow along with the story a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But definitely I think I always find really strange. I just find it not good or bad, just strange. Particularly I think in Happy Places when that, you know, that's really my natural voice necessarily, right? I my placement was slightly different and I was giving some character to my voice in that piece. So hearing that and how it came out was really, I think, exciting when you do something a little bit different result, and then having that built into the world of the play itself, I think was fun. but still notes, always notes for myself.
Yeah. I'm actually going to throw a little dash of chaos in here, and I'm going to ask you guys, mostly for Kara, David, and Anna, how did you guys feel when that first episode was released?
Oh, I'm glad you asked, Sean, because I wanted to ping in, but I was like, no, I won't, because it's Sean's question, so I'm going to say shut up. We put so much work into it, and it was so many hours. Like, I record in a closet that is, like, you know, it's this tiny closet, and it gets so hot in there, y'all. Like, 2 hours into recording in there, I'm just sweating. You know, it's like, really tiny. We put so much work into it, and I, you know, I was obviously talking about the project to, you know, a lot of people in my life and everything, and it's kind of like, so what have you been doing? You know, and it's like, well, it was difficult to try to make it not sound like, oh, I'm recording a podcast in the closet with my friends. You know what I mean? And I feel like it was difficult. You know, people would be like, oh, okay, so you're putting out a podcast just like everybody else in the pandemic, you know? And it was really difficult for me to be like, no, but like, we're doing it for real. It's different. And so, like, we're doing it. It's really good. And so it was, I felt like I kept being in that position of kind of trying to be like legitimize it or something. And when that first episode was released and I had like a website to send people to, and I, you know, and it's like, no, actually just pull it up like in your Apple Podcasts or whatever and you can listen to it. You know, and then everybody started being like, oh, wow. Like, this is legit. And it's like, yes, it is. And so it was really gratifying whenever you kind of had the concrete thing to, cause I was like, what, 6 months worth of work that we put in it, more mm-hmm. like 7 months that we put into it before it was released. So it was so gratifying to finally like have the thing to point to. So it was it was a fun day.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it was a little nerve-wracking because like whenever you release anything, like, and especially it's nerve-wracking when you're like on stage, obviously in a fun way, but you know, sharing something with an audience. But when it's kind of like, all right, we're just hitting send and it's out into the universe and you'll see what happens. There was that little like, oh man, here, hopefully people like it. I don't know. Also hearing it kind of being able to hear the soundscape that went into stuff, whether it was music, the editing, all of it kind of coming together was really gratifying. Because again, we're in our little bubbles where we know what our kind of voice track is, but seeing that puzzle come together, all those pieces come together to make this one thing was really, really exciting and really cool. And yeah, and so then it became a little less like nerve-wracking to share and a little bit more like, no, everybody listen, like everybody, here's this, here's that. And like, I just remember my mom being like, tell people what the website is, tell people what this is. She was on it. I was like, thanks, yeah, mom. She like getting stuff out. So yeah, so it was both nerve-wracking, but then once it kind of became a thing, it was more like, mm-hmm. ooh, now I really want to share it with people, especially. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, it was a moment where Sean and I are very similar people. And, you know, I tend to be a person who starts a lot of projects, like learning web development, and then abandons them. So once that first one released, I had that moment of, like, clarity where I realized, oh, we're actually doing this. Mm-hmm. This is an actual real thing we're doing. We aren't just sort of saying we're gonna do it. You know, everyone in the world has had that moment where you're drunk with your friends and you say, we should start a company. Let's quit our jobs and start a company. Let's do this thing. Like, let's do it. Let's chase our dreams. So when that first one released, it was that moment of like, did we listen to our drunk selves? Did we really do this? but not in like a scary way, in like a really exciting, like, really cool way.
Mm. So then thinking back on the season itself, for everybody, what was the most challenging role that you've played?
Mine is very definite for me. In general, it was it wasn't a single role, it was a show, which was Happy Places. Because I had just like three really minor characters in that, but like, of course, I waltz in and I'm like, I'm gonna make all of them sound super different. And so I kind of used up my kind of like super high bubbly voices for the kind of like earlier characters. Mm-hmm. And then whenever it gets to the later, like the last character that I play, which is like kind of the most important, I was like, oh, well, I already used like my high pitch, so I'm just gonna go like really low. And I'm like, ooh, I'm gonna do this really low voice. But I don't think that it worked super well for that character. Listening back to him, I'm like, that makes no
So I don't know. My character had to be the one who was into it, and I happened to like a nice velvety voice.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad it worked out anyway.
I was like, oh, okay,
what's that milkshake over there?
Yeah.
So she walks in and goes, "Oh, can I have some ice cream?"
Yeah, you can. See, like, okay. I wouldn't have made that choice if I wouldn't have. It was kind of like a delayed thing of like, oh, I can't really. Anyway, yeah. So I'm glad it worked out for somebody. But yeah, that was challenging trying to do three different people.
I mean, I guess kind of similarly with Copper Angel, that one popped in my brain of having to play different characters and make them unique. And there were different dialect requirements, so that assisted in a way. I guess the French widow was it's just a monologue. But I think that was, for me, that's what popped in my brain as being the most challenging, because like I speak French and I can do a French accent. I say I speak French. I studied it through college and I can get 2 to 3 sentences in with a French person, and then on the 4th sentence they'll say something and I'll be like, what? But like wanting to do that dialect but not make a stereotype, because you know this isn't a farce, this isn't an over the top character, it was very, very grounded and very heavy material. And so making sure she remained a real person while still doing justice to the storytelling of this time and this place was an interesting balancing act. And it was, but at the same time, it was fun to work with Clay on that monologue and kind of find the peaks and the valleys and the flow of it and the emotional journey of that. Again, it was very heavy, but and a challenge with all those elements, but very rewarding because of all of those challenges.
And that was a real letter, correct?
Yeah.
That was a real verbatim piece.
Yeah, that was a real verbatim piece, which also added like a weight to it as well, you know, and just, yeah, so that was another aspect.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had a lot of fun accent work during that whole play.
Yeah.
It was really fun. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it was the two difficult ones were the two ones where I had to do the accents I was uncertain on. So New Jersey boy, which kind of was allowed to go ridiculous because that was the whole point of the show, but it was one of those things where I remember calling Shawnee from yeah. 15 and being like, Shawnee, can you record these lines for me? And she's like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. And I'm like,
oh, Shawnee,
David, so much.
And I remember doing that. I remember doing that scene and just like blushing because I was so unconfident in that accent. And then also similarly was Clarence in Copper Angel, because it would be one thing if I was allowed to do fully RP or fully Cockney, but we kind of had this feeling that like he wasn't well educated enough to be full RP,
like,
but he was too well educated to be full Cockney. So I had to find this like half RP, half East Londoner, like
middle class.
Yeah, like
London,
so it was, I was trying to think of like, how do the people in like Stratford talk? Like how's the guy who works at the Primark at Stratford talk? And it was such a challenge, and I to this day I still don't feel I got it right. But you know, like that was probably, yeah, just the accents when you're not
finding the right
fully
voice for the
sold
character
on it.
Yeah, yeah, and being comfortable with it can be.
You know what though, I have to say, in regards to the New Jersey play that you guys did from one of the Bears plays, me and Luciana, my wife, for those who don't know out there, she and I have like really good family friends. Mostly they're her older family friends who are from New York and New Jersey. And we were over at their house a couple weeks ago, and they're like, yeah, we listened to that episode. I just loved that episode where they were from New Jersey. Are they from New Jersey? Like,
oh, yeah, they put on some terrible.
No, I was like, no. I was like, half of them are from the South. I forgot to pass that on to you guys. Yeah. But he was like, yeah. He's like, that took me back to home. You know, I was like, that's awesome.
That we didn't butcher it completely.
Mission accomplished.
He literally said it took him back to like being feeling like he was at home.
Oh, good.
The personalities and everything. You guys channeled it.
Nice.
So popcorn back to you, Shay.
I think Chloe was probably the most challenging. I mean, of the two right characters that I did this season, just because she's just different, like from me personally, right? So I think like as an actor, getting behind this like very romantic, bubbly, optimistic Midwesterner with her like delightful ice cream shop and like endless hope that like despite
many, not many, like you
as opposed
at all.
To the no, intense like, no, like, cynicism of Shay Donovan.
girl has had her relationships go wrong so many times.
That's true, right? But like, she still believes in love. And yeah,
like, that's right.
Love. It's Hold waiting on. For me. Like she's the kind of character who like the birds and the mice are going to come help her clean up the ice cream shop later, right? Just like a real, real moment of that. And yeah, I think like stepping into the mind space of that was like a fun challenge, because there were times where I was like, I need to put on this hat. I need to get put on this perspective and like really get where she's at on this. But it was really enjoyable.
Yeah, I would say for me, the most difficult was actually Waldo Duggan. I just don't know why. I had a very hard time connecting to the essence of who Waldo was.
You were directing at the same time.
Yeah.
Which that and might I, be a fact. Like, you're thinking probably, like, maybe because you had to think about so many characters in a directing sense, it's easier to connect with the one that you connect with. Whereas if Waldo doesn't innately connect with you, it makes it that much more difficult because your brain is in other places, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
As the editor of that play, the lines that when I would listen back, I would always mouth along to were Waldo Duggan's, because I just liked the way you said some of those lines.
Yeah, I did
like,
too.
You had some fun lines.
I still remember, the newspaper man is dead. Just like pure sorrow and rage in that line was so funny.
That's true. He's an older, he's both funny, but an older guy. And so there's like a sadness. Sure. But yeah, you had to balance a lot with him.
Exactly. Like, not saying that it was a fun character to play. I think I liked the challenge for sure.
Yeah.
But it was just, it's for some reason I find when there's a smaller role, it takes more tender love Fleshing and care. Yeah. You know what I mean? And
well, you have to do the work. Man. The script doesn't do it for you as much.
That's exactly it.
It's not as all spelled out for you sometimes. Yeah,
exactly. And he had, like you said, some fun lines. But as opposed to, you know, Maynard, which was complex in his own right.
For sure.
Especially like leading into like kind of his decline. Mm-hmm. I still found Waldo just ever so slightly more of that challenge. I think it was because of the technical part of it. You know what I mean? So... Watermelon.
Get it.
Watermelon break.
Enjoy your summer treat. We're going to do a compilation of every time you eat a watermelon.
This one's for Cara and Anna. What are some of the challenges of voice acting compared to acting on stage or on camera? And were there certain, we sort of already touched on this, but were there certain characters, voices, or dialects that were tougher than others?
Well, I'm very loud as a person, naturally. So, you know, I'll let Anna speak to film, but the difference between this and live theater is huge. I think it was for me, like, that's, you know, theater stage acting is my past experience. And you're not really framed or bound by anything. So I can wave my arms about and be as loud as I want. And so thank you, David, for being patient with me. It was like pulling teeth to get me to get my levels down to where they should be. And I've already been like watching in this interview and I've peaked several times. That's so figuring out how to sort of stay truthful and be honest and connect with people, but also be aware of the medium and your distance to the mic and watching your levels and everything. That has been an adjustment for me.
Yeah, for sure. That's kind of a big aspect of it, of kind of knowing how to utilize the mic and how close, far away, how to, when you have moments where you're acting and you're supposed to be yelling, but you don't want to blow out the mic, just kind of figuring out all the technical elements of that. But I think at the same time, maybe it's different from theater where, I mean, it depends on the space. Obviously a black box theater, that's where people are close. There's an intimacy to that. That's going to be different from like outdoor, big kind of epic space. But at least with on camera, it's kind of similar. You just have to adjust based on how close you are. So we know that, okay, we have this mic, and depending on the moment in the scene, if it's real quiet and real intimate, I have to know vocally how close I can get and what I need to do to make that like true and grounded. And then have those moments that are still true and grounded and emotionally truthful where it's bigger, but I don't mess up the technical element of it. So yeah, it was definitely learning the technique behind it. And I think we're still learning that and navigating that for sure. But I suppose it's kind of just keeping that in mind, where whether it's, again, a theater thing of it's like a different space. This is more of this kind of space and that kind of space, or on camera where, okay, it's more like you're in a close up as opposed to a wide shot or something like that. And knowing how much you can give and how much, you know, maybe sometimes less is more in particular moments, because we're so close and you can hear everything. But then also being, because you just have your voice, you don't have your face, you don't have your body, you don't have all of those things, still finding that expressiveness vocally and those shifts and those changes. Yeah, it creates its own fun set of challenges, but I think we've kind of gradually developed. And then you have things, yeah, like certain character voices or dialects, which we spoke of, and some we've either trained in so we know and we're comfortable, or it's a matter of, yeah, kind of finding, okay, this person, they're older than me, or this person's a little younger, or they have this kind of experience or that kind of experience. The world's been a little harsher to them, or maybe they're a little bit more like wide-eyed and innocent and still hopeful. And just how do you find that within your vocal quality and finding the voice of that person? It's definitely, it's a fun means of character development and discovery. And it's nice in a way where you just focus on the voice. So you don't have to worry so much. You can do any weird thing with your face. You can do any weird thing with your body to get there. But, you know, you just have to make sure that that storytelling, that character translate vocally. So it's, yeah, definitely a challenge, but a fun discovery process, I think. So speaking of challenges, for Shay, what were some of the challenges and then also maybe some of the benefits of working on radio plays during lockdown and kind of throughout 2020 and everything that year has entailed?
Yeah. So, I mean, sort of like what David said, right? I think a lot of us were in this boat of like, I'm going, like, this is the time to embark on all of the greatest creative adventures of my life, right? Like, I bought a loom. Like, I was going to get into weaving briefly. Like, that didn't last. But, like, everyone had that sort of thing, right? And I was already doing some of my own creative stuff, and I was not working at the time. So there was all this like creative energy bubbling and ready to go. So for me, it was a really exciting outlet. And the fact that I was brought in after you all had really established something that really had a lot of momentum, it really, for me, was filling an exciting need, because I was like, oh, this is a creative outlet that actually I can take really actionable work steps towards that really is going to have a life beyond this fling of a thought of let's do a thing, right? So I really loved it. And I think too, right, like we've sort of mentioned this, I'm currently in my childhood bedroom in New York, actually, but normally I'm living in London. And, you know, we all ended grad school and like everyone sort of like bopped out all over the globe, mostly back to the United States. And then I was still in London, like, friends, my friend. So getting to reconnect all of you in a really focused, intentional way and getting to be back in the virtual room with a company of actors that I love working with, which up until that time wasn't sure when or if that was ever going to be something that was in the cards for us again, just because of our geographic challenge, was a huge, magical, wonderful gift. And really something that I treasure for that time. I think it was really important.
Sean, were there in any of our interactions with the playwrights any that stuck out as being funny or inspiring or just anything that sticks out in your brain?
Okay, yes. Mostly Ryan Armstrong. I would say maybe Ryan Armstrong. That was fun. Only because we have history and we go back. And as David knows from the interview that we all did together, it's just it's playful banter and making fun of Sean. And
straight up, it was.
That's exactly how
the
it was.
The interview, laughed, Sean was maybe like was 1 minute late. So Ryan and I were just like, yeah, screw that guy. Sean sucks. Yeah, I was like, you know, exactly. It's just because Sean sucks. And Ryan goes, I've known that for years.
He would say that. The jerk. I hope he's listening and called him a jerk. Nah. But yeah, I'd say any interaction with him was fun and playful and very just silly. It was because that was another instance where, like Shay, you know, has just mentioned, I didn't know if it was ever going to be in the cards where he and I were going to work together. And we had always talked about it for years. You know, anytime I would be back home in Denver, it was like, man, we just got to do more plays together. You got to do your work and da, da, da. And that was literally 10 years ago, like the last time we had that conversation. So yeah. to know that it finally came to be in this way was really special.
So speaking of our playwright interviews, David, what have you enjoyed most about doing the interview sessions with the playwrights?
I just really enjoy getting their insights. I mean, on a side note, I found I really enjoy doing the interview process. Talking with people who are passionate about things is something that's enjoyable, but there's like a lot of construction happening. So if you hear a bunch of noise here,
you're good. I don't hear it.
There was a thunderstorm where I was. So I was like, ooh, hopefully nobody noticed that.
There's people walking in the house.
I think it's really enjoyable hearing people who are really passionate about their plays and their work get to talk with us about their work after we've finished it. And as a side benefit, we do the interview before we release it. So they don't get to know if we're actually good before they talk about it. So that's really cool.
So thinking about this season and sort of reflecting and then looking forward, this is for Anna. What are some lessons that you learned from season one, either as an actor or on the technical side or on the business side of things?
Well, for the interviews, don't say like so much. That's a personal pet peeve that I will. The last one that we did with Dan, I was like, why? I said it. I just said it now.
Girl, I was listening to it. I was trying to notice it. And I caught maybe like three times.
I noticed it.
I just said it. So
a grandparent would notice who has harangued me many a year about doing it. So that's one thing. Those weird vocal tics that you find, whether it's listening to yourself in the interview, which again is a little bit more conversational and every day and you're thinking your thoughts. But even as an actor, finding again that, again, it's a technical side of how do you tell the story, how to be this character, but also make sure you don't have too many weird vocal tics that are distracting or make editing more difficult. So yeah, just getting a little bit more of that finesse, that technical finesse. And then for business things, I think what we found is how to make this really cool product, how to have a production and a season and to create all these plays and to share all these plays in this way. And then from there, it's how to share it even more and then how to make it sustainable, especially as a CFO, kind of thinking financially and stuff, but how to make this something that we can continue season after season in a long-term kind of sense, you know, where we can pay ourselves, where we can ensure that guest artists are paid, where just those elements so that it doesn't just become so much of a blip, but something that we can continue to do more long-term. That's something that of learning how to make that happen, which is, again, still in process for a young company, but is definitely at the forefront of my brain at the moment. So, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. For everyone, if you had to swap roles with somebody else in season one in a play, what role in play do you swap? I've got mine already. Since I asked the question, I'll go ahead and say, I think I would make a great Quinn in Rabbit on the Print.
Love it.
Quinn is the biggest, I don't know if we should be swearing in these interviews, the prickliest prick of all time, and I think I would be great.
I was gonna say Quinn too, because there's she's that part of me that's like that that aggressive, that on the ball, that type A, that like not taking any prisoners kind of quality that she has. That's just really fun to just be that kind of person. Yeah. Maybe also, I guess if I was gonna pick something else, I liked doing the play that Cara and I did. With Turn, and they were very different people, so it would be fun to do like a switch of that, you know, where she could be the okay, I'm gonna try to be mature with this crazy person, and then I'll be the crazy person. But I loved Cara's emotional over the topness, so, but that would be a fun role just to play with.
That would be fun to switch it, yeah. I loved David's role in Plan. I mean, I loved my role as well, but like if I could like add one or something, I loved David's role in Planned Obsolescence. Like there was one line where you're like, Maddie, he was a dog or whatever. And I just, I was like, I want to say that line so bad. I loved him. He's so funny. Hey, Maddie, where's my tackle box? Like I still remember it. It was so
the line
funny.
I'll like, never get over is I-95 is effing brutal.
Yeah. It's so such a gift. So I would have loved to have been able to do that one.
Nice.
Yeah, I think it would have been fun to to switch doing Happy Places, switch David during Happy Places, but only for that little scene, only for like a little scene where you had to that like where you got slapped or whatever. Where she's like, no, don't kiss me, and I don't know why. I was like, oh man, that was just such a good scene. You did it you did it wonderfully, and I was like, I would have loved to have just, oh man, been cussed out by Shay.
Dreams.
Maybe someday. No, that was.
Really, if you bad. Drink with her enough, she'll eventually slap you in the face.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
Thanks for winning.
Rules for the future. So, if you had to trade jobs with somebody else in the company, who would it be? For everybody.
Absolutely no one. I don't want any of your jobs.
I don't want none of your responsibilities. No, get out of here. I don't know. Editing might be fun to do. I don't know if I'd want to do it as on the reg as you all have to do. But yeah, just some kind of, yeah. Because I've done a little bit of editing, more for film stuff, but it'd be interesting to have to do the soundscape quality. I think it'd be a lot, and I think once would be maybe enough in a season. But it'd be neat to learn that.
For me, I wouldn't be, like, I wouldn't want to, and I wouldn't be able to trade with anybody. But like, if I could pour somebody's like knowledge and expertise and experience and vision into myself and then do that job, I would really love to have Shay's like whole just like vision and like mind for planning and like just go-gettiveness and all of that. I would love to like have that ability and be able to do that. So yeah.
Mine would be you, because I love to organize things. So I feel like operationally, organizably kind of jam with that. If I had to swap, I feel like I would like that. I love a good spreadsheet.
Nice. Nice. Love it.
So Sean, so you as CEO, our fearless leader, who in this interview decided to eat some watermelon.
That's right. It was delicious. And it's all gone. So thanks for bearing with me.
No, you're good. You're good. As we're jealous of it. And then also, but because you had to juggle a lot as CEO, as well as being an actor and a director in this first season, what roles did you prefer in making radio plays and making this first season happen? And were there any roles that you were afraid or nervous to take on?
I'm going to start with the afraid and nervous to take on part first, because we all remember my reaction after our first board meeting. It was just, well, F. And it's not because that the board meeting actually went spectacular. It was really well run, like really well. It was just smooth. Everyone had their say. We received some amazing feedback from our amazing board, and I honestly, like, we could not have had better board members to guide us through the process. But good God, my palms sweat right now just thinking about that moment of just like you know, just
because it's like so much to think about.
It's a lot to think about, and it made me think about how much more that we needed to do. And how much, you know, how far we've come. But, like, for some reason, presenting things to people and feeling like I have a hard time feeling like I have to.
You have to have an answer for everything.
I had to have an answer for everything. And it's like, oh, man, I don't have the answers for this. But I was like, will this work? You know?
Yeah.
And so that was nerve-wracking. And that was I would say that was probably the thing that I was the most afraid to take on, but I feel a lot better at it now that the first one's over. Other roles that I preferred in making radio plays, and just go back again to editing, because of my background in like radio during my undergrad years and stuff, that's just what that was kind of like the impetus for this whole thing anyway. It was like, I gravitate to that and I know how that world works. And so it's like, I can find myself comfortable in that zone.
You have a foundation.
I have a foundation there, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like, I would always feel comfortable just popping back to doing that, you know, if ever the need arose. But it won't, because David's awesome, and so he's got that on lock. He throws me a bone every now and again and lets me do the interviews, and I'm very glad for that. So, yeah.
Thanks. So this one's for Shay. What are some areas of marketing you would like to see BTC move into going forward?
Yeah, so I don't know much about this, but I know the kids are really the TikTok. And I wonder, I think it would be fun. I don't know how fruitful it will be. I don't really know a lot about marketing through TikTok, but I'd like to learn about it. And also, I think it would be a fun place to play with some content. So it could be cool to play around in that sandbox. Also, no, I think just building our engagement on Instagram, having more opportunities to engage in live Instagram events, like once we really build and boost our following and get a lot of excitement behind that, having our loyal subscribers and wonderful patrons join us for those really live interaction, I think is an exciting avenue that we're already sort of talking about building. And I'd love to see our listeners engage with us more in.
Nice.
Cool.
David, for you, what has been overall, again, acting, technical side, whatever it might be, one of the biggest challenges you've encountered? And then also, what has been one of the most rewarding moments in this entire process?
Well, we mentioned Copper Angel and also Happy Places.
Yes.
Outside of the editing, I have a curse because an ancestor many years ago forgot to carry Madame Zeroni up the mountain. And now every time I have my mic running, there's like construction happening and there's always fire trucks. And there's like everyone who's been in a recording session with me knows at some point I go, what is happening?
Because what are these leaf blowers?
There's like multiple people with leaf blowers walking around. Like it's inevitable every single time. That's the biggest challenge for me, is overcoming the curse. Someday I will carry Madame Zeroni up the mountain. But I think the most rewarding moment probably for me was a moment where a member of my family who I didn't even know had heard this send me an email saying that he really liked Rabbit on the Print, my uncle. And I was like, who? So various members of family like passed it along until it got to him.
Yeah.
And I was like, he's the uncle who's like very successful. You know, I mean, all my family's successful, but he's that family member who I've always been like, yeah, I'm an actor and you're like a billionaire businessman. So so having that moment of like being like, oh, yeah, it did do good was nice.
Nice.
So we've had several guest actors in season one. Right. So what was it like, you know, with changing the group dynamics by adding additional voices to the mix, and what challenges did that bring? What? What challenges did that bring?
Let's see. No, I think, it's funny because I think we did our Barrow's Plays because they were small, they were a little more self-contained. We were like, let's see if we can just make this happen, first and foremost. And I think when bringing other people on, we made the conscious choice to like, let's make sure this is at least kind of running smoothly before we bring other people into the mix. But by bringing other people into the mix, it kind of, for me, it was like, okay, we're in a secure enough place where we know how to do that. And so in that way, it became less of a challenge and a little bit more exciting. You know, you get to act with different actors who, and some of whom I like maybe knew, but I didn't have a chance to work with, or some people I didn't know at all. Like I've never met Hank before, but you know, Cara knew him and he was fantastic and wonderful to work with. And I was thinking of Olivia too, where we were in school, but different years. And so we hadn't had a chance to ever act together, but it was a neat opportunity where it didn't matter if we were in separate states or in separate countries, you still had a chance to act with really talented people. So that was really cool. And I guess the only challenge would be, you know, if Zoom freezes up or if you're in the middle of a moment and, you know, something wonky happens with your Wi-Fi. But more than anything, it was a very exciting benefit and, you know, additional blessing to have additional voices. Yeah.
100%.
Cara, have we gotten some feedback from our playwrights for season one? Does any feedback stick out?
Yeah. I think Bera and Emily ended up being the ones that I sort of kept in touch with a little bit for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So we've kind of like emailed back and forth. And I know Emily emailed, I can't remember if it was all of us or Sean and me for sure, just saying that, you know, how excited she was to hear it the day that Act One dropped, and that she was really excited to hear it. And so, yeah, and I loved working with Bera. Bera expressed that it was really fun to hear those plays as well.
I also heard from Ryan Armstrong immediately after Rabbit dropped, and he was like, very big kudos and all of that kind of stuff too. So him and Leotis, they both were like, man, it's just so cool to hear your work done in this medium, you know. Cool, yeah. So they were very grateful for that too. It's nice. Good feedback all around. Yeah.
Now, speaking of hearing your own, Sean and David, did you ever find it difficult to remain impartial when you're editing for plays that you were acting and or all three directing as well?
Yes. the bottom line, yes. Because there are moments, obviously, as an actor on stage, you cannot take back unless you get another chance the next night to do it again. And so when you have, you know, yourself in audio format, I cannot tell you the number of times I probably would needed to like chain myself to a chair and you know, just duct tape my mouth, because I was like, oh man, I just want to run to my microphone and just really quickly record this line. And I may say that I had done that on a couple of times that I never ever worked out as well as the original recording, and so I could never use my new takes. I was like, fine, I'll just use this crappy nail biting take that I've done months ago and leave it at that. But yes, it's very difficult at times to remain impartial. But then there are also moments where it's like, ooh, that sounded good, you know.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I 100% I did that to you, Sean. Like, nobody else knows this. And Copper Angel, like, whenever I listened to the before it was released, I did the same thing. It was like listening to it and it was like, well, that's cringy. That's even cringier. That's super cringy. So I've re-recorded like so many things and sent it to Sean, and I was like, I promise I won't like force you to put these in, but if you feel like putting in some better acting, you can pepper these in if you want to. So
I've done that too. Some of that.
You did the same thing with Happy Places, where you were I didn't like this scene, so you sent me the scene again.
Okay, to be fair, I was recovering from my second vaccine that day.
You were
and I was
sick.
Feeling
you
rough.
Were sick.
Oh, okay. I did that to you as well.
Yes, but yeah, I did the same thing. There was a scene in Happy Places where we were playing with the idea that Luke turns on the Southern charm when he is interacting with a customer. And that's something that happens in real life. So it felt right in the rehearsal room. But listening to it, it didn't play at all. Mm. It didn't play. Just objectively, I over-tuned it, because it's one of those things where, you know, it just didn't play. So I completely re-recorded those lines with significantly less Southern accent. Basically talked the way I talk in my day-to-day life if I'm not, because I have a slight Southern accent unless I'm talking to people who aren't from the South. It's like a weird thing where if someone's from the South, I
you
have this
lean
bit
into
of Southern accent, you know.
Yeah.
But I fully was like sitting there and I was like, but to be fair, I would have made anyone else re-record that too. It was one of those things where like I had the conflict and I decided if this was Anna, I would have made her re-record it as well. So I haven't re-recorded anything else as much as I have desperately wanted to.
Yeah.
You resist the temptation. Way to go.
Yeah.
Cool. So question for everybody. Do any moments from rehearsal stick out in your memory?
I have one, but Shay can go. You're muted.
Yeah. Go for it, Shay. There was a scene in Happy Places between David and I where it should have probably been like a pretty simple scene. It was at the end of a long recording session. And it was something about, it's the scene where they're talking about what they like on their pizza, and like, she likes mushrooms or he likes mushrooms. And like,
it was artichokes.
Artichokes, that's what it was. And we say it like good a bunch of times. And we just couldn't, I was having a heart. I said it so many times. I was like, Clay, like I need to understand. Like, anyway, it was a conversation that began about justifying repetition of words that devolved into just like the most uncontrolled giggle fest of my adult life, possibly, that really took me a long time to recover from. David also participated and I would say was guilty of engaging in said giggling as well.
No.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, it shouldn't have been hard, but getting through the recording of that scene somehow became, it will live in infamy.
We couldn't do it.
Love it.
My two moments, I would say the two things that I love in rehearsal were any moment that I had to kiss, obviously.
That's what I was gonna say.
Love it.
I was like teaching Sean how to, first hearing you make your kissy noises and then having the conversation of why don't you try this, and you were like, no, that's dumb, why would I do that, and I was like, it'll sound real and not like
right. And then you gave me all these tutorials. You were like, just kiss your hand.
Yeah,
just kiss
your hand. Well, like, Sean, have something to connect with. Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
But look, let me tell you what happened. I did that during Happy Places. I kissed my hand, and David edited them all
out. I only edited them out. I only edited them out because they were too quiet.
Oh, okay.
So it's like finding. So you're finding the middle ground.
The Sean D method obviously is the
Sean.
They sounded
it's the
sound
mm,
effect.
It's
no,
the mm,
the, here's for our listeners, for our listeners to understand, because this is also mine, and it's something I should have brought up as my biggest challenge as an editor is if we have a kiss scene in any of the plays in which Sean has kissed, which I think is like up to like three now.
Yeah, several. You've been busy.
I just love my kissing scenes.
Sean doesn't just do a I love you kind of scene. He goes, I love you, girl. Imagine listening to that again with, like, I don't even know. My headphones are at minimum like $150. They're noise canceling. They're extremely balanced. They give you like a surround sound feeling. So I'm just surrounded by the sound of Sean Dale going,
yes.
I just had to look it up. There's also the reputable thing.
Yes.
Shay.
Lord. Yep.
I remember, like, we were like, wait, how do you actually say this word? And they were like, does anybody else say it this way? And Shay was, you were the only one that, like,
no, I said reputable as well. I also said
that's
reputable.
Right. David said it.
As opposed to reputable.
Shay and I were up, we're on the same side there.
But it just became, it devolved into, wait, how is this word actually said? Hold on.
And then we're like, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, ever since then, I feel like I've said it both ways. I feel like I fluctuate now.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, does it
we
matter?
Gotcha.
Yeah. I just love doing all those takes, like, all right, Shay, just say reputable. Just say it five times in a row, and we'll just plug one of those into the
Do you know one day this will that, be the, reputable. The take that made it into the play is a take of her saying reputable with at the end of that, she, at the end of that take, there's like a long pause, and then you hear Shay go, darn it, reputable, reputable, reputable. And I took one of those and I...
You just connected it.
Love it.
So you don't hear Sean say, hey, it's reputable. You just hear a long gap, and then you hear, darn it.
I still maintain that perhaps there is a small regional pocket in, like, Westchester County, where I grew up, where we say it that first way. I had to have gotten from somewhere. I'll have to ask my parents
reputable
tonight.
Yeah.
I also say reputable, so it's fine.
I love
we'll
it.
See
South
what
Carolina
we'll see.
And Ryan, New York.
There's we'll a weird pockets.
Exactly. We'll have to start a poll and see what our listeners think.
Reputable or reputable.
It was the same play where, Sean, you had to have me do, like, I don't know how many takes of the line. It was a serious moment at the end of that play, and I had to say, we have a paper to run. And it was supposed to be done with, like, determination and, like, you know, drama and, you know, whatever. And for some reason, every single time I said that line, I was always like, we have a paper to run. Like, you know, here comes Superman. I had to do the same thing. You're like, okay, so here we go. I just need you to say that line, like, five times over and over and over and over again. And finally, you were like, that's it. Okay, thanks. But that was one of my biggest challenges.
The last one came out nice. And then I think just... anytime I had to record the thief stuff with you guys was for David. I don't know. Wait, there was another one. You needed my sound effects, wasn't it? Like.
So yeah, I need. It was the thief sound effects, because we had done like a take where we all recorded the prologue, and that one we had done like various different takes of that, and like I had one from me and one from Shay, and I didn't have the one from you. I don't know. You must have labeled it as something weird and I just never found it, you know? But so I was like, Sean, just send me the thief sounds. And I remember the thief sounds being over the top. But then I get the prologue is what, a minute long? I get a 5 minute long take from Sean doing Batman noises into his microphone and clearly having the best day of his life.
He's having a great 5 minutes.
You missed your calling as a jewel thief. You were so good.
I did.
Speaking of kissy noises and thief sounds, for our next question, this is solely for Anna Fontaine. Please describe your relationship with Sean M. Dale.
I think that Sean and I have found, well, even before this process, but throughout this process,
yes,
after playing spades, and you realize how you communicate as a spades partner, and yes, I've realized since that day on, we have a sibling dynamic, I would say, definitely, where you we love each other, like, you love each other, like, to no end, but they do or say certain things that you just can't. You're like, what are you doing? That yeah, filter of I should be nice isn't there with you, which is how you know I'm your true friend.
That's right. When people keep it real with you.
Yeah, exactly.
When they crush your soul in meetings. When it demoralize you.
It cracks me up because all of us will dunk on Sean. We all at various points, except for Kara, who's too pure of a soul. But like, you know, even Shay slips in her zingers. She just sneaks them in there. Sean doesn't get mad at us, though. Sean specifically gets mad with Anna. So you two really do have like the ultimate, you're not allowed to sit at the same table energy.
David could throw like a witty retort your way and you just laugh or whatever. With me, you get affronted.
Can't win for
love. It's coming from a it's coming from a place of truth and love.
Yes. So, Kara, can you please tell us about the tension that boils up regarding your name?
Yeah.
I knew this was going to come up. I already see David having an opinion about it. Yes. So, my parents gave me a shocker. I'm an American. my parents. Just lead in with that.
Everybody.
Surprise. So my parents gave me the name Kara. I've always been Kara my whole life. The first time that I went to the UK, which was actually before my time at East 15, it was for a number of weeks, if not months. So I had a while to be there and like experience life there. I ran into the situation where every single time I would say, "Hi, my name is Kara," British people would always do the thing where it's like, "What? Your name is what? Kara? It's Kara. Oh, Kara." That would always happen every single time, like without fail. And so finally, I just got to the point that, especially whenever it's like, okay, you're going to go over to the UK and study for 2 years. I was like, you know what? Rather than deal with that every single time I order a coffee at Starbucks or introduce myself to somebody or whatever, I'm just going to introduce myself as Kara. Like, it's the same name, different accent. I'm fine with that. So anybody who will have met me in the UK,
which is all
well,
us.
I would have introduced myself as Kara, but anybody who has known me up to this point in my life, they will have known me as Kara. I'm not bothered by it. Everybody else is bothered by it.
Well, but it's more
I'm
like
deeply
saying,
bothered.
What's in your own? How would you say your own name?
Yeah.
And weirdly, I found myself fluctuating these days, but Kara tends to be my default. Mm-hmm. But it's like I wouldn't expect somebody to whom I introduced myself as Kara.
As Kara.
Yeah,
we've called you. I guess that was the disconnect, because like you were Kara for 3 years, and then suddenly we heard you say it.
I know.
And we were like, wait, what?
I have to say that I feel redeemed because I didn't know you super well. Like, we weren't in like groups first year of grad. And so I would refer to you as Kara because I had seen your name written down. And like a number of people in our year were like, "No, Shay, no, her name is Kara." And I remember being like, "Are you sure?" Because she's an American. And they're like, "No, no, it's good." Because I'm the opposite. I'm the girl in England who everyone's like,
Shia.
Yeah. Like, y'all spent a really long time, like, killing us to take the O's off that name. Like, really easy. Like, we're right next door. Like, Shay is my... So I'm the opposite thing, where whenever people have a hard time, I'm like, "You can do it. I'll wait."
You double down.
Yeah.
Right.
See, I'm only upset by it because the way you revealed it. It was during a borderless meeting. It wasn't like in East 15, I was like, "Hi, nice to meet you. My name is David. What's yours?" And you say, "Oh, I'm Kara. You can call me Kara. Either way is fine."
No, I introduced
That's not how you
the
introduced
same way
yourself.
As anybody, the which problem is, my name is Kara.
Yeah, the problem is then 3 years into this friendship, suddenly in a board meeting, you or not a board meeting, one of the meetings.
It was whenever we were asking each other, like, how, like, we wanted to make sure, like, when we were confirming our professional names for how to credit us in
and
the credits.
You specific, and you so casually just go, Kara.
Okay, but so here's, like, a tiny bit of backstory. So a British person explained to me one time that, like, so the word that Americans would say is caregiver. Like, you know, I mean,
carer. They say caregiver.
Yes. They would say carer. So say the word carer in an English accent, and it's Kara.
Kara.
And so
Kara.
When they hear the word, when I introduce myself as Kara, it doesn't register linguistically as a name. But it's one of those things where it's like, if somebody walks up to me and is like, you know, oh, hello, my name is George. I'm not going to say, oh, hello, George. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to say, hi, George, like, in my accent. So
That's different. It's different to pronounce one letter strong. If your name's Dominic, Dominic, that's a different name than Dominique, right?
That's
like,
true.
There's different, entirely integral sound
there's a Q,
differences.
There's a K.
But everybody else
Shay,
is
your
bothered
full name
about
is
it.
Is your full name Mari Shay or Mary Shay? There's a difference.
Yes, there is. There is.
Yeah. I did tell everybody in the meeting yesterday that if you just call me Your Majesty, all of these problems would be solved.
True. We'll try to set this betrayal aside for a moment.
Yes.
And we talked a little bit about, like, weird noises and bloopers, but are there any, maybe especially sound bites, kind of maybe in the midst of editing stuff that have popped out to you, either as the best and hilarious or as the worst of, like, what, or whatever it is in the midst as an editor?
So we've brought up the Sean kissing noises and, like, giggle fits and stuff. Obviously, the worst is anytime somebody does, like, lip smacking. But my favorites are one we mentioned before we started recording, which was Kara dropping in the most seductive voice I've ever heard in my life. This one's for you. And then immediately went into a Smeagol voice. That one sticks out as a wonderful one. Another one that I love are just all the times in every single one of our things. Every single one of us at some point in the recordings, there's a recording where you just hear them go, like, in, like, deep acting, like, the newspaper man is dead. Fucking airplane! Every single one of us has a moment like that.
It's like, what is that?
I really, from, like, season two, I'm going to take every time someone has a moment where they yell at a truck or a motorcycle or anything, and I'm going to clip them and I'm going to put them in a special folder that's just for me.
Love it.
Sean.
Yeah.
You do intros for our episodes. What do you love most about it?
Specifically introducing interviews.
Yeah, I hate that.
Have you ever struggled?
I struggle all the time, and
your voice does sound beautiful.
I truly just can't stand doing an intro for each of these that's why I had to write it down. That's why your lovely advice about writing down a script, and you saw how smooth it went today.
That's right,
like butter.
I don't even think I had to edit a thing.
I just think you should have kept the Ryan Armstrong interview opening where it goes, you should have kept it in the interview where it goes, hi, I'm Sean Dale and I played Waldo. And then Sean, you don't get this in the interview, but in the Zoom chat, he just looks expectantly at me. And I was like, you can't introduce the interview like
this is
that.
The interview episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I learned a lot that episode. I learned that I never wanted to do that again. Oh, yeah, I'll get out of this.
I hate that too, Sean. Like, I'm with you there. I hate
Thank
that
Thank you.
Too. I got it right
Thank
it
you. Next question, please.
moving on. Next question is for Shay. What have you enjoyed the most about being on that London GMT time while everybody else is 5 hours behind?
Definitely love that always coming at the very end of my day. These are not loves, I'm not going to lie to you. Yeah. No, and like make my little tent and then Gareth being like, when are you going to be done? I need to go to sleep. And me being like, done when I'm done, Gaz. Leave me alone in my tent. And then Dinah the cat being like, oh, you made a tent. Can I come in? And me being like, no, Dinah, I'm busy. No, it's nice because I have like my own quiet little like end of day moment. But yeah, definitely has its own challenges for sure.
Special thanks to Gaz.
Yeah.
Special
thanks to Gaz. Shout out to Gaz.
Shout out to
Blaine Bluebell.
Yeah.
Blade Bluebell. <R.I.P.
laughs> So, Shay and Sean, does the company have any plans for projects besides radio plays? We kind of touched on this a little bit. Or any new content? Would that be on the horizon anytime soon?
Yeah, I mean, certainly in terms of new content, thinking about intentional ways to really expand our social media presence in a way that's going to feel really sort of like build some ritual for us. So perhaps on certain days a week, you could expect to see certain fun things. And we're also really interested in giving you a little bit more of a peek behind the scenes. And this is sort of a great taster of you all getting to know us a little bit more. And hopefully once you have a taste, you're like, give me the whole bowl of ice cream. I can't learn enough about the group behind. And there might be some content to support that hunger coming at you soon. Maybe, maybe not.
Okay, here's one that specifically is only for Sean, Kara, and Shay.
Yep.
What's your favorite acting role you've ever done?
Mine is easy. Captain Hook. Hands down. I played it my senior year in high school. Shout out to Cindy, my director, for casting me in that. And then I revisited it when we were all in East 15 as my self-penned monologue project. And I just have a soft spot in my heart for Captain Hook.
I was in a beautiful physical theater production of The Tempest in LA 6 years ago now, where I played Ariel with two other female dancer actors. And that was just like, still to this day, the coolest thing I've ever done. And I loved, loved, loved it so much. So that's always a favorite. And also, super weirdly, Phileas Fogg. Didn't see that in my acting career. Definitely when that cast was like, Chris, my friend, like maybe perhaps you made an error. but no, that ended up being such a delight and so much fun and favorite projects I've ever done. So
nice. Love it.
Yeah, and yeah, I have a love affair with gangster movies and gangster things. And so playing Arturo Uy in grad school was literally a dream come true. I was like, he's a gangster? I get to play, I got to play the hardened part of him too.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to get to be evil and not the goofy, like, what?
Yeah, because Sean, because you're just such a lovely like, you're a person who you can just walk into a room, you don't know anybody, and you can come away with three best friends. Like, you're just so personable and lovely and funny. And so it was so cool to see you, yeah, as Arturo, where, like, there was just this hardness and, like, this man will kill you if he has to. And he won't think twice. It was so good. Yeah,
loved it. That was my favorite one for sure. Because I don't know if I'll ever play gangster again. But that was... that was a little piece of what I enjoyed in my heart.
Nice. So this one is for David and Anna. What do you think you would be if you weren't an actor?
CEO of Borderless Theater. No.
Going to stage a coup later. No worries. Watch out.
Like, I've never liked anything else, if I'm being completely honest. Like, if I wasn't an actor, I would still be trying to do something that was very similar to being an actor. I'd try to be like, you know, a full-on podcaster or a radio announcer or a news anchor, something like that. Because I've always just liked interacting with people and, like, I don't know, maybe a comedian, but I hate writing, so probably not that, you know? Like,
yeah, it's funny, because I think acting, like, hits all the things, because I was just thinking, like, what would I like to do? And it's like, I've always loved... I love history, and I like thought about being an archaeologist as a kid, and then I like art and culture, and I was like, well, maybe I could do some kind of like diplomat or embassy or cultural attaché thing. Then I like learning about religion, and then I like, I don't know, there are all these different things that I like, and I realize what I love about acting is it's like, oh, I can explore all of these things in different ways with different characters, you know, whether it's my literary side of the brain and text analysis or like digging into like a particular time period or history of a character. So it's tough because acting and theater and working and that helps tick all those boxes. But if I guess if I had to pick an embassy, I don't know, ambassador, and then at night, Indiana Jones-esque archaeologist, Carmen Sandiego.
Yes,
brilliant. That's, yeah, yeah, because Carmen I want to have like a little bit of an edge, so maybe.
Oh, then I change my answer. I'm going to be the private eye who's chasing Carmen Sandiego.
Yes.
Great.
And we have like a weird sordid affair.
Yeah, we have like a weird dynamic where it's like, yes. Catch me if you can. Yeah.
I just want to be in Rockapella. Singing this, singing your theme songs.
Great. That's the plan.
Boo, boo, bae, doo, wah. Anyway.
Is that mbop?
Oh, that's how it starts.
Oh, like, I'll have to go back and listen because it just sounded like Hanson.
It did sound like Hanson. That is how it starts.
This is a grad school interview, Fred. What would be your dream character to play / perform and why? Mm. And this is for everyone.
Again, super easy for me. I've had the same answer for years. It would be Volumnia in Coriolanus by William Shakespeare. It will probably be a number of years, potentially decades, before I would be eligible to play her. But oof, she just has, I won't give any spoilers, but you should go read the play if you haven't read it. She's just so fierce and so unrelenting in going what she's after and so ambitious. But she's also so passionate and so she's a deeply loving person, but those really come at weird odds in the play. So one day.
Mine are two characters that are basically the same character, Hamlet and Spider-Man. Basically the exact same people. But you know, I love both of them. I think I'd make a really good Hamlet and I think I'd make a really good Spider-Man. So
you would.
Nice. I would say, I guess I have two as well. Margaret in the Henry VIs and Richard III. Like that whole arc and that whole journey for she's such a similar kind of what Cara was saying, like, oh dang it, Shakespeare, he can write really well, can he? But just a character that's like strong, but then there's moments of weakness, complicated, good but bad. But you know, like I would love to be her. And then for like something newer, there's a really good play. Shout out to Heidi Schreck. She's doing fine with her life. She doesn't need my shout out. But there's a play called Creature that she wrote that I love. And I'm torn of like, would I want to play the main character in it or would I want to direct it? I don't know. I want to do that play in some capacity. So shout out to Creature by Heidi Schreck. It's a real good play.
I would love to play Walter in A Raisin in the Sun. I've always loved, that was one of the very first plays that I read as a kid, and I was like, and I was so happy because we read it during English class and I got to cuss and say, damn these eggs, damn all the eggs that ever was, and I was like, I get to say things like this and not get in trouble. I like acting. I like Walter. I love that character that after that whole play and everything. But a play that I would love to do is Othello. I would just love to do Othello, but I'd like to, yeah. I don't know if I want to be Othello or like Iago. What either? I feel like it'd be weird.
Iago would be fun too.
You need to be in a production where you get to alternate every other night.
Yeah, you could switch. That's what you need. Yeah.
You know what? Radio plays switcheroos.
My dream role that someone needs to write and cast me in is a biopic about Meryl Streep, the Meryl Streep, but like throughout her whole life. So like for me to play young Meryl Streep, like the window is closing, like they gotta get it rolling.
Actually, you know what's really funny? Let me tell you a story about Shay and Meryl Streep. It was literally the second day of grad school and we were on our way to class and I had mentioned to Laura Blackwell, I said, Laura, I was like, man, I was like, that Shay person, Shay, right? That's her name, right? I was like, man, I don't know what it is. She just reminds me of Meryl Streep. And I was like a young Meryl Streep.
She does.
Yeah. And Laura looked at me. She like literally put her hand on my shoulder. She said, whoa, do you want to literally add that kind of pressure to her right now? Like... It's like, she literally stopped. She's like, do you really want to put that on her right now? I was like, oh, I guess that would be a little bit of pressure to put on somebody's second day of graduate school in acting. I'll hold back. But now she gets to know when she comes back.
When she
listens to this interview.
What is everyone's personal favorite play from season one, whether to work on or listen to?
I'll just keep the ball or the tradition rolling, whatever, with popping in first.
The ball of tradition.
Yeah, the ball of tradition.
That's what we need. We need a ball of tradition.
A ball of tradition. I mean, every single one, you know, whenever you think back on them, has moments of that are just really special and really rewarding. And, you know, so I certainly have like moments that are my favorite throughout all of them. But two really stand out. Like I've already said that historical drama is really my thing. So Copper Angel was a really special one for me. And I really loved getting to kick off the season with a bit of comedy with Anna, because I don't know. I really like just diving into a bit of like quirky comedy, but with some heart behind it. So I got to do that kind of twice in Bera's plays, which was a lot of fun. So those are kind of the characters in the plays that I really, really enjoyed.
For me, it's got to be Rabbit. I think Rabbit was one of those ones that, like, I really liked the script when I read it. And then doing the editing, doing the re-records, doing the re-editing of the entire thing. It's one of those things that, like, by the end of it, I really was like, I should hate this play, but I still really like it. And I just really enjoyed listening through, especially, like, there were certain scenes that I would, like, be, like, mostly just, like, half listening for anything weird to come up, like, any weird, like, distortion or anything. But, like, I remember the scene between Quinn and Camellia, where, like, you two are talking about the, like, the role of the journalist in, like, this society. And I remember just always being like, I'm just listening. No, I'm really listening. Like, just, like, really kind of checking in. So that one's got to be, like, favorite both to work on and listen to.
Yeah, I loved, I'd say, working on Copper Angel. But I truly love listening to the Bera's play that the three of you were in, and the one that you and Kara were in, Anna. Like, you, those two plays that from Bera were just are just so funny and so well acted. Like, the comedic timing was just perfect. It's a joy every time to listen to.
Yeah, I guess like I think listening maybe. Maybe Copper Angel, because that one was so big and there were so many different parts and people were recording different things. So, like, that was the first time, like, honestly, I was like, oh, I feel like I am listening to this for the first time, because there are so many elements and parts. And again, in post-production, like, the music weaving everything in and out, that was really neat to see how all of that came together. Because I know it was a lot, but it came together really beautifully. And I liked the rehearsal. So it's kind of the opposite of you, John. No. I liked, for both... I guess, yeah, Bera's plays. And Rabbit, I like the group dynamic of Rabbit, where, like, the snappy dialogue, which, again, like, David, you're able to get in the editing and make sure that that was there. But, like, that back and forth and that banter of this group of people and this ensemble feeling.
Am I here? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. We can hear you.
Yeah, I'll say listening, definitely Copper Angel. It was just beautiful, right? Just, like, objectively a beautiful, wonderful story to really, like, sink into, like, a cozy, bittersweet fiction adventures, not even fiction really, right? Absolutely love listening to that. And then I think yeah, working on Yamek and Rabbit and that energy and my character, I think that whole atmosphere was super, super fun.
For our final question, so the part that's just for Sean and Kara, is there going to be a season two? What's in the works for Radio Plays?
Season two is happening.
Heck yes.
Season two is happening.
We had a lot of really, really good submissions for season two. So, so we're really excited about some of the scripts that we've had come in for that.
Yeah, and it's going to be really good. Shay's going to get her period drama. I don't know if you get to speak RP, but I'm sure that there could be a character who could throw some RP in there.
We'll make it happen. We'll talk to the playwright.
So there will be a season two. And then is anyone going to be taking on new or different roles coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I say yeah, none of us will, but... We have Sarah Oshman, who will join us as kind of marketing assistant liaison person to Shay, and just all around great actress as well. And so it'll be nice to have another person on board in that regards, and to hear a new voice, you know, to hear what she has to do.
And also, so. I think, at least, because Sean, you already directed, and I think we've talked about it, but... Yeah. Some of us are going to step in and do some directing, myself, Kara, David.
Right. Yeah.
So we'll try our our hand. Yeah, exactly, Carr. I think you're already getting started. So yeah, we're all gonna put on that directing hat and see what that's like. Yeah, lots of guest actors, lots of like new and exciting people from all around. So it'll be an exciting time.
So this is it. We have concluded. We have come to the last question of the extra super long episode for the post-season one.
Season one wrap-up.
That's right. Ooh, and that's exactly what the title of this episode is going to be. So, yes, we did it. We really did it. And, like, I'd be remiss if I didn't say the thanks to everybody here, you know, right now who have helped this come to life, who have seen this. And like you said, David, you know, like looking back from the beginning to the very first episode to now, it's like, whoa, we're really doing this. And it's so cool to see that we already have, we can now look back and say at the end of season one, we did it, you know, and we're going to continue to, you know, put out some more great work for you guys. And we hope that you'll continue to tell your friends. So thank you. Thanks to everybody for tuning into Radio Plays this season. And to all of our patrons who supported us financially. A huge thank you to you. You are legitimate rock stars who sit up above us, you know, looking over us with your dollar bills. Just thank you so much. And you are treated as such. And equally to all of the people who have just followed us on social media from the very beginning, and those who continue to follow us now and who have liked us on all of our social media platforms. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you for sharing things and spreading the word. And I just want to take a really quick brief moment before we go to tell you what's to come. So we have some great exclusive content coming for all of our existing and new patrons who are going to be hopping in the mix. Some behind the scenes material. Mm-hmm. Some bloopers, maybe a couple kissy scenes, maybe some, like, you know, we'll see what we can find. Some playful banter for all of those people who are into that. And then we have some exclusive rehearsal recordings that you can see. People who are going to be patrons are going to get exclusive peek at this live recording for this interview, so stay ready for that and all of its uneditedness. And I hope you have, you know, 6 hours like Anna and David do to when they listen to their podcast.
The Snyder cut, the extended version.
So yeah, and then you'll have a chance to have a video recording of all of our other interviews as well, like including all of our other playwright interviews coming up in season two. And for our really, really, really special donors, you get one exclusive night with the team of Borderless Theater Company where we play D&D. And you get to be the special guest in our magnificent adventures
to come. Just for anybody, like, we've been doing this for, I mean, we've played D&D at various points throughout life, but
we started my 26th birthday this campaign, so it's been going, what, a year and a half?
Yeah, and a half of our current campaign. So we can determine if you want a guest spot in the current campaign or if you maybe, like, want to do a one-shot, you know, kind like, exclusive thing. But whatever
both
it is.
Anna and David are terrific dungeon masters. Terrific. And throw that in. So
yes,
it'll be a fun experience no matter what.
Exactly.
Us weirdos.
Yes, exactly. And so again, we have an amazing, incredible season two lineup with some beautiful, thought-provoking plays from some new and returning playwrights. So hashtag stay tuned, keep spreading the word, and we will see you all in season two. All right, Radio Plays out.
Woo!
Woo!